fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew, and my good friend Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
I'm doing really good. Thank you for asking. Andrew, you know my other podcast. I don't have a clean musical cue, right? It's more of just like I start potting the music out at a certain point, but it's not like here, it's like a specific beat. I'm like, and well, there, and then you start, and it's like, we never discussed it.
It just happened so organically. And we are, 8 years into this. So I should hope that you have it down at least better than you have the outro.
In fairness, the outro is the one part of this that has changed. It theoretically doesn't change
once.
I mean, maybe twice.
Yeah. It's fluid. The outro, but the intro is like there's like a beat. And then I drop it, and then you come in, and
my sultry, soulful voice.
We never planned it. There was no communication about it. It just was like, this is how we do the intro.
Yeah,
I love that.
I don't have consistency. You know that about me.
I don't have that with my other podcast, and not because
you don't have a captain consistency.
I don't. In fact, I do the intro, so Tom comes in, but it's after we've already potted it out and everything. So it's. It's kind of all me, and I'm doing like I'm rubbing my belly and patting my head a little bit. Is it patting your belly and rubbing your head? Which one is it?
Rubbing your belly, patting your head.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of that. There's been multiple shows where I'm like, okay, scrap that. We'll start again. because there's just a little bit. I should probably practice a little bit.
But. I mean, part of it like you haven't had. Just as many reps. Like, think about how many of our first 50 episodes were the second or third try.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we re-recorded.
Probably a dozen shows, half a dozen at least.
Easily more than that. Or we would finish and be like, I didn't hit record.
Well, and you
let's
know,
go again.
Some of those lessons translate, but other parts of it, like doing the intro, like it's a total. And furthermore, we're a monthly. The other podcast is monthly, right? So it's 2 years. I've done 24 episodes. We were already 100 episodes in at the same stage. Mm-hmm. 40 and 20 was already 100 episodes in at that stage. So I'm just doing this fewer reps, like you said. So. But yeah, I've never gotten that comfort. It just makes me feel like this is a very comfortable.
I hear it. I know. I could do it with my eyes closed. I could crack the beer. If you were just playing the audio in your headset, I would know when to come in.
Yeah. I believe that actually. And there are a few little things, sometimes I'll like miss an unmute or I'll accidentally press a solo or something, but. Even my timing on the unmutes, like it's just like, yep, boom, boom, boom.
That's what happens when you do something every week for, for years,
500 weeks. It is a little bit of a multi-step process that never changes. So that does help. Mm-hmm. Intro has not changed, right?
When we came to Watch Clicker. Yeah.
Well, in any event, we're not here to talk about intros, podcast intros, although.
It's the intro of the podcast.
There's some meta there. Rather, we're here to talk about watches, and we kind of have, this is a fun week for me. This is a fun week because we have a little bit of, and by that I mean sort of post, like, major watch event week, because we have a little bit of, like, trickly new stuff, but this is the week where we've kind of, like, everybody's like taking a beat after Watches and Wonders, and we're able to sort of sit back and kind of reassess, like, okay, what the fuck just happened? Mm-hmm. What just happened? And then from there, really digest the information and say, okay, with everything that did happen, this is what I think was really cool. And not to say that we did a bad job with that last week, but last week felt harder, right? It's a more hectic. And I was like, well,
It was a fire hose.
I'm not going to be able to talk. That's kind of interesting, but I'm not. Here we are now where not enough new stuff happened that like
I can't talk about anything else, but we get to kind of revisit and be like, all right, this happened and this was pretty cool. And here I am 10 days later and I chewed on this and I can kind of appreciate it more.
This is my favorite time of year, right on the heels of Watches and Wonders, because now like all the hype stuff is out and now all the like planned kind of trajectory releases start coming out. Right.
Interesting, yeah.
You know, you get this big explosion of cool, hypey stuff at Watches and Wonders, and that kind of sets off
the and novelties.
Yeah, and that sets the spark for the rest of the year's big releases in spring and moving into summer. And you know, I think a lot of brands probably hold their planned releases for after Watches and Wonders, so they don't get lost in the craze of it.
I know it's sort of out of order, but do you feel like this week you wouldn't mind starting us off?
Oh, I am unprepared for that. And I am going to say, I want a big caveat. This week, either Chrome didn't update or iOS didn't update. I can't organize my tabs like I usually do. I'm really bothered by that because I'm not really good at change.
Don't cry for me, Argentina.
I'm not good with that. So my process has changed. So please do forgive me. I'm out of sorts. I want to start with the Formex Reef release that we're seeing. 39.5mm case, COSC certified in forged carbon. And I was looking at this and I was kind of like, okay, well, why is this exciting? Number one, well, it's exciting because it's a forged carbon case. And we talk a lot on this show about metallurgy and metalworking. And
we talk about talking about metallurgy.
Yes. So when I was like, how does one forge carbon? Because that doesn't really make sense to me. I understand how metal is forged, but forging carbon just, it didn't. So I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole in this forging of carbon, and it's actually exactly what you'd think it is. but I just wanted to know, it's a cool process where they take like scraps of carbon basically. And rather than it being woven together, they heat it and press it and they forge it in the same way that you would forge metal, but it's carbon chunks. And this is,
yeah. And sort of to contrast with, I think the traditional sort of method for carbon fiber is to take carbon sheets and to laminate them with epoxy or some sort of binder.
Right. So you're still using some kind of resin or epoxy or binder,
but instead of sheets,
you've got like shit, packed together and then stuff with glue. So imagine like a bird's nest that you then just compress into what is now forged carbon, which looks super cool, and it's very on brand for Formex.
I like the way of forged carbon. I like the texture. It feels organic. I like it better than a traditional carbon fiber.
Me too. And I think in the application of a watch, it's just a better use of material than a standard woven sheeted carbon fiber.
And knife scales too. I love forged carbon knife scales.
Yes, because it feels really good. Yeah. It's like got really good tactile. It's a thing. But this is a really good. I love Formex using this material in this application because the Reef is already such a cool, tooly, kind of futury, gnarly watch. That to use this forged carbon is sort of perfect for it. And I'm really glad to see this on the heels of Watches and Wonders. These are coming in at, price on it here, about 2000, like in the zone, $2,230 on a bracelet, $2,000 on a strap. And it's the Reef. Like this is a watch that we know, but it's now coming in forged carbon, which I think is, it's very Formex.
I think that it would be easy to overdo this. I'm glad that they stuck with the bezel and the dial and they didn't try to like, this is a watch that I feel like I should love, that I don't love the Reef in general, not this specific model, because it is doing all of the things that I want a watch to do. It's super thin.
So to be clear, it's not the case that's forged carbon. It's the inserts. It's the dial and the bezel insert. The case is still 316.
That's right. But it's a super thin dive watch. It's got a ton of water resistance. It's cost. I mean, this is a really, and of course, Formex always has a little je ne sais quoi here. It's the sort of interchangeable bezel system that they have. It's rad, but for whatever reason, this watch, it's not my favorite. With that said, I think this is my favorite version of this watch. That's perhaps not my favorite watch.
Yeah, I think I know you own a Formex, and
yeah, I own the SN39, which is like actually one of my most prized watches.
I've yet to come across a Formex that's for me, but I still love all of their watches.
They do such a great job. Yeah. I mean, build quality is, you know, we were talking the other day about Manta and how they just crush this space. I think Formex is right there. They obviously do something different. I might have said this exact thought last week, but build quality, it's really hard to beat at $2,000.
They're just doing a really different thing, right? We're talking like muscle car versus sports car.
Yeah, that's right. They are all together more like engineered and more.
These are rock crawlers versus, you know, something else.
I'm gonna start with a Rolex, and this is one of those watches I mentioned last week that it was like, you know, I'd kind of like to, but I'm not going to. And Rolex of course had a lot to say at Watches and Wonders, but this is for me the coolest thing they said. Specifically, this is the new Rolex Oyster Perpetual Day Date in 40 millimeters, coming in Rolex's new precious alloy, which is called Jubilee Gold. Let's get the...
So we really need to know more about metallurgy. Like, are they making a proprietary gold?
It is. It's a proprietary. Now? Yep. That's right. That's right. So Jubilee Gold is the showcase. Am I saying that right? Jubilee Gold is the thing they're showing off here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they've done it really well. Kind of an interesting choice, I think, to introduce a new alloy. It's one of their older models. The Day Date has been in production for, since the 50s, I think, or maybe the 60s. Always been made, always part of the catalog. It's sort of like ho-hum. A couple of interesting things.
One of my favorites, though.
Me too.
I love it so much. That fluted bezel is just like, it would just be constantly filled with drool.
Something I didn't know is the Day Date has never been made in steel. It's always been in precious metal. So... which I was unaware of. But AKA the president, this is a...
That seems wrong, but that's a too bold a claim to make to be false.
That's right. And for the record, that is Rebecca Dalton at Monochrome, who's made that claim, and I tend to believe her.
It's too bold to be false.
Jubilee Gold is interesting. I really like it. So it is not rose. It's a something in between white, yellow, and rose gold. I would say like if there's a triangle, this is close to the white and gold spectrum, and then it's got just a little bit of rose,
just a touch of like bricky.
It winds up being, I think, maybe, gosh, I hate to say this, I think for me, this might be a platonic ideal of gold alloys. I'm not a,
you might be right.
I'm not a huge fan of white gold, and for a vain reason, I'll just say, if I'm wearing gold, I think I want people to know I'm wearing gold.
Yeah.
With that said, yellow, especially Rolex's yellow gold, can be a bit garish.
It almost looks cheap, right? It tends toward like PVD Nixon,
sure,
bright yellow, almost cheap gold.
Especially when it's new.
Yeah.
Once a yellow gold watch, I think, gets worn, I like it better. But a new yellow gold watch, I'm like, and then rose gold for me is maybe not my thing. I don't love a true rose gold. And so with this, I'm like,
They've like worn the gold and softened it.
Yes.
They've worn the sheen off, and it looks like you would imagine yellow gold ought to look on a watch.
That's right. It's got a warmth to it that I think, you know, you'll see this.
Comes from that rosiness.
You see this with sterling silver where it's got like a richness to it. Mm-hmm. I actually really, really like this gold. And this is a really cool dial on this thing. It's a green aventurine stone dial, and it's got this depth. It's got like a bit of depth to it. Baguette markers on this, with a big marker at 9, big marker at 6. Of course, we don't have a 12 because we've got a day, and we don't have a 3. We've got a date, a magnified date. Golly, Andrew. I think this is a really lovely release. And the green, it surprises me. It surprises me not because it's a surprising release. It surprises me that I was like, well, you know that GIF of the lady who's tasted something and she's like, no. And then like, that's kind of... I've decided I really like this watch.
It's the same green as Flubber, the Robin Williams movie, right? It's an unusual green.
Yeah.
Like it would be kind of like a not groundbreaking. It would be an outlandish green for another brand, but to come from Rolex in this green, it is especially outside of the... It feels really outside of the norm.
It looks old and also new, and I like this watch. Now, I will say, this is a $62,000 watch.
But you know what? This is the sample, right? This is the taste, the tease, because they are going to... This Jubilee Gold is going to start hitting the shelves and other SKUs without diamond baguette markers. And we'll see these at, like, Obtainium prices. Or, you know, not this one, because it's got 14 carats of diamond on the...
Right
on the dial,
yeah.
But we'll see this. I'm really excited to see the spread of this Jubilee Gold, because like we've talked about gold watches, and I'm always like, this really isn't for me. I've seen some two tones, and I'm like, this is what does it. But this not yellow gold, like not 70s banker, 80s banker on too big of a bracelet gold is... This is my shit right here.
You know, I'm on record saying the only watch that I would consider a walkaway watch is a Moonshine Gold Speedy. And, you know, I think that those retail at about 50 grand. And then, you know, you can get them for less than that, right? You can get a Moonshine Speedy for anywhere from 35 to 40. Five-ish.
You should like get hit by a richer person's car.
But that's a Speedmaster, right? This is a Day-Day. I don't know. It's got diamonds. I don't know. Is the value there? Yeah, of course the value's there. I I'm not going to...
Purely material cost, the value's there.
With that said, I was a little bit... I did have a little bit of sticker shock.
You know, I was actually kind of surprised. I felt like it was on the low end of what they could charge for an off catalog.
Oh, interesting.
For an off catalog, new metal, bunch of diamond, aventurine.
It kind of it has all the trappings of being a Rolex $100,000 sticker.
Oh, well, that's, yeah. I mean, I don't think this couldn't be 100,000, but 60, yeah. Now, Day-Date comes in both 36, which is sort of the traditional, the iconic size, where 40 is the more modern size. This is only being released in 40. I'm fine with that. It's a Rolex. I think there was also a 41 that was in existence for a while, but really Day-Date's 36 or 40. This is just in 40. Sure. I'm okay with that. I think
I'm pleased with this release.
Yeah. It's a cool release. It's, you know, it's Rolex, right? It's hard to get too like excited about Rolex, but
so many Rolex releases are like just boring. And
I'm excited about this one.
I like seeing a new proprietary metal, and I'm excited to see what else gets this Jubilee treatment.
Yeah. The Jubilee gold. It's a really cool, this is maybe my favorite gold alloy that's in existence right now.
I prefer it to moonshine. I prefer it to,
It feels like it kind of does a similar thing to moonshine, but it does it better.
Mm-hmm.
I think it does it better.
At least in these product photos, you know, I guess I'll have to see. One of y'all go buy one of these and just send it to us for a couple days.
Yeah, we'll send it back.
Yeah, probably. Gosh, I'm so like out of sorts by not being able to sort my tabs. Okay. Alpina Star Timer Pilot. We have a new and updated model of this 15-year-old Pilot-y field watch, and I really like it. I think it's all of the things that I want out of a field watch, or kind of like that Pilot Fieldy-esque military style watch. So we have a 40 millimeter case. It's 10.14 thick, 100 meters of water resistance. Movement on here is, Lejeune SW200 base. So it's an Alpina. What's happening?
I was laughing at you talking about peens.
Oh, I always be talking about peens. It's the AL525. So it's an in-house modified movement. It comes in how many? Hang on. Three colorways, a black, a blue, and a green. And they're all really good. The black is exactly what you want. Really stark, bright, lume-filled, chunky numeral markers. The blue comes with kind of a fotinaed tan markers. And I'm here for it. I like this. It's not exciting. It's not breathtaking. But it's just a really good release. It's $1,800 in steel. $1,900 PVD coated. It's not limited edition, and I have no notes. This is exactly what I want.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the IWC Mark 20, and I think that that's obviously the closest sort of luxury comp for this watch. You know, they're,
and the Mark 20 is $8,000.
Seven. Yeah. 6,500 to $7,000. Yeah. Looking at these watches, very similar watches. We've got date positions slightly different, but Alpina's doing, and sizes are basically identical now with this upgraded case. So this new case is 40 millimeters, which is smaller.
Because they were previously like 41 and some.
and 10-1 thick, which I think is like almost a millimeter off of the previous thickness. So we've got a much more competitive package. And for me, who's a size queen in that regard, this is a great improvement. We've gone from a case that was totally schmedium on paper to a case that is really competitive on paper. I say on paper because I don't have any personal experience with these watches. With that said, no bracelet option, which
Yeah, and at $2,000, I kind of would like to see there be a bracelet option, even if it pushes it to $2,300.
That's right. And of course, I'm not an expert on Alpina. I feel like every time we talk about Alpina, it's like, I don't understand. Like, this brand is like really escaped my knowledge. I think that they're a cool brand. I think they've got cool history. I'm going to say, I think that they're competing with the Mark 20 with this release. Well, IWC is a bracelet company, right? That's IWC does fucking bracelets. And so
they sure do.
To make a watch to compete with the IWC bracelet watch, it's like, hey, Alpina, could we get a bracelet for this thing? With that said, great upgrades. And some people don't care about bracelets. In fact, some people don't even want a bracelet. Great. I do love the big, is it Globalite markers?
Yes.
I'm not wild about the dial texture.
Yeah, but you know what? Dial texture is here to stay.
You said,
it seems like everyone's doing it.
You said no notes. That's a note for you.
I accept.
But case finishing looks stunning.
Yes, it does.
Case finishing looks stunning. And the shape of this case is great. The way the lugs curve down and sort of like create a little wedge at the end. I think it looks stunning. Mm-hmm. Really, really good execution there. This is a very well-built watch. I want them to make a bracelet just because I think they would make a dope bracelet.
It'd be so good on a three link.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Or do do like a some sort of funky five link or whatever, right? I don't know. Alpina can do bracelets.
Yeah, we've seen it.
And they do, I think they do pretty cool bracelets, right? Their Alpina comes on a really cool bracelet. Yeah, it does.
You said wiener. I'm in the painter.
It's not like they can't. It's not like they can't do it, but it does seem like that is not where their pride of craft trends.
Yeah.
So, it's a great release. I actually think the price is fine. I think this is a good price for this watch.
I don't disagree. I think with an in-house caliber movement, the finishing on it, I think you get there. I just, for some reason, I always have trouble wrapping my head around a multi-$1,000 Alpina. I don't know why.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this is cool. This is cool. What's next, Andrew? What would I like to talk about next? I don't know,
because I can't organize them.
I just pick watches from our text message thread.
I'm so disoriented right now.
So Hamilton's released a couple watches in the last year that you and I have raised an eyebrow and pinched our noses at.
They have done some weird stuff.
I'm remembering the Call of Duty khaki.
Which is like, oh, so lazy.
And so when I saw this watch pop up, I was like, oh boy, here we go again. I could not have been more wrong. Hamilton is celebrating America's 250th anniversary.
Which they had plenty of time to plan for.
With a special khaki field mechanical. Okay, so that's my setup. And I'm thinking, oh boy, here we go. But then I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, nah, you know what? I'll read on. This is a reference that's based on an old military reference, specifically the FAPTA 5101 Navigator's Watch, which was developed in the early 1970s for U.S. Air Force navigators during Vietnam era. Okay, that may or may not be true. It's certainly probably maybe true-ish, but that doesn't really matter because what it was a 36 millimeter Parkerized steel watch that was, for the time, for the era, kind of oversized. This is a 36 millimeter blasted steel watch that is small-ish that comes equipped with an H50, a 36 millimeter Hamilton khaki mechanical with a bubble plastic crystal in a 36 millimeter package, 18 millimeter lugs, 100 meters of water resistance, 80 hour power reserve, and a $725 price tag.
Fixed lugs.
Fixed lug bars, fixed bars, yep. On the lugs. So pass through only. Only 250 of these being made.
Which is a real bummer because this is a banger.
It is a banger. I think this is a really, really great watch, Andrew.
Yes, it has all of the things.
All of the things.
Yes.
Oh, wait. I said 250. Isn't that what I said?
That is what you said.
When I said that, I think I was reading it, but...
They're making 1776.
1776, that's right.
So for the 250th anniversary edition.
Correct, Amundo. That's right. So delete, ignore. They're making 1,770, and you can pre-order them now.
I might get one of these.
This thing is really fucking cool.
And from what I can tell, there's nothing about it that makes it seem like an asshole anniversary watch. Until you get to the case back, which bears the engraving United States of America, 250th anniversary, exclusive 2026 edition, and then your normal spec sheet, water resistant, your serial, and Swiss made.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't bother me.
No.
That doesn't bother me.
No, because it'd be really easy to go way too over the top.
Yeah, I think this is, I just think this is a terrific release. It's priced right. It's, now I will say, if you compare this release with the source material, they beefed it up. So the original one of these was pretty slender. In fact, the bezel is slenderer, which makes the dial feel a little bigger. The lugs collapse a little tighter and the lugs are a little bit daintier. It's a really handsome watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say I like it better than this release, but it's got some appeal to it. Now I think that old one has a 16 or maybe a 17 millimeter strap, which or a lug opening, a 17 millimeter lug opening, which is perhaps untenable. So maybe they had to beef it up, but also the lugs are kind of butch, unnecessarily so, and that bezel is pretty.
Well, in this image that I'm looking at of an original,
yeah. Well, that's the one I just showed you was original.
Too. But what you can tell on the close up is that even Hamilton found it hard to get a strap to fit.
Yeah, I think that's a 16 millimeter strap and a 17 millimeter lug opening. That's my guess. Yeah.
So they've made it a little. They've closed the strap gap,
which I think was actually par for the course. I think that was a very common practice, was to use undersized straps in military watches. So I think that they've done a really good job with this release. And,
yes.
And I'm hoping that these sell like hotcakes so that they consider putting... I think this would be a great everyday banger. I've been a huge fan and proponent of the Hamilton Khaki Mechanical. It's one of my rotation watches. I wear the heck out of that watch. I would consider swapping this in if it had white loom.
Mm-hmm.
As it sits, we've got old radium, and it, to use Andrew's phrasing, that's my only note.
Yeah, but you know, for this style of watch,
250. Yeah, I mean, it's the way to go. You can't go another way.
It's the right answer for an anniversary vintage inspired, and it's not offensive. Fotina loom. I think brands have done a good job in the advancement of Fotina to make it less weird yellow.
I don't want to continue this conversation.
All right, well, you fuck off.
What's next?
I don't know. I'm out of order.
Andrew, you're making this difficult.
No, my phone made this difficult.
Do you want me to pick one for you?
No, I know what I want to talk about. IWC. We have some IWC watches, so I figure we'll just batch them.
Sure.
Okay.
Talk about the one I don't want to talk about, though.
The Venturer Vertical Drive. Is that what you didn't want to talk about?
Yes.
Good. So this is IWC's foray into what everyone is doing and making a space watch. And it looks the part.
Hate it.
I sort of hate it too. Because I don't like the watchmaking design decisions that they've made in the way of, like, this isn't a watch that I can wear and not feel like an asshole. I can wear an X33 and not feel like an asshole. I can wear a Cosmonaut and not feel like an asshole. I can wear a Speedy and not feel like an asshole. This, if I wear this watch, I'm going to feel like an asshole because this big white silicone strap that I hate. It's a big white, what's this case material? The white ceramic that I don't like. I don't like all the white, and I get why they did it, because they want to match white on spacesuits. So here's the skinny on this thing. It's a 44.3 millimeter wide case, 16.7 thick, 100 meters of water resistance, integrated FKM rubber strap. But here's where it gets cool. So we've gotten past the parts that we hate. They're calling it the vertical drive because this whole watch was designed with the intention of being able to operate it from the bezel. So from winding to complication manipulation, everything is happening through bezel manipulation so that you can theoretically do it without having fine motor skills because you're in a spacesuit. And here's the other thing. They're working with a company, I think it's called Foray. I have to look real quick. I have to remember. Oh, shoot.
I'm sorry, I'm no help.
You're not helpful at all.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're working with a company who is working right now to design the first commercial space station. VAST, not Foray. It's called VAST. Yeah. So it's interesting to see all, like, we're in a new watch space race, right? We're living the 60s of every watch brand throwing their hat into the ring. And because of the commercialization of space travel, everyone gets to partner with a company and have their branding and logos on this thing. I think the vertical drive integration, the manipulation of complications, time setting, winding, all coming through the bezel is really interesting. This is an offensively large watch, even for IWC. But the technology is really interesting. And now that it exists, they're going to eventually be able to slim it down. I hate the way this watch looks, though. This looks like a movie prop watch.
Oh, that's a good thought. Yeah, no, that's, I like that. Yeah, I don't really understand. It's a patent pending rotating bezel system. I'm just reading from Fratello, that allows the wearer to control all the watch's functions without using a crown. Okay, fine. Inspired by the notion that astronauts would be wearing thick spacesuit during spacewalks and therefore would need to adjust the watch while wearing protective. Why do they need to adjust the watch on EVA? Okay.
I don't know. Maybe they need to adjust to, like, time elapsed. I've never been to space. I don't know.
A clutch system transmits the movements of the bezel to the winding stem. This is what the brand is calling vertical drive, hence the name of the watch.
It's interesting.
A right? rocker it's, switch it's, on the case's left side allows the wearer to change between different functions, such as setting different time zones or winding the movement.
It's like that that Casio watch, the hexagon or octagon watch, where you rotate the bezel to fit, like, change what the buttons are going to do. And it's interesting technology.
It's interesting. That's right. It's also a solution without a problem.
I mean, I don't know. Have you ever worn space gloves?
No, but look, these guys. I mean, how long is an EVA?
I don't know.
Is it long enough to set your fucking watch? The answer is no, Andrew.
I mean, you go whole days without setting your watch.
I didn't wind up. So I finally said it, but I don't think I didn't set my watch all day.
You've come to my house to record and wearing your Speedmaster and it's not moving and it's set 3 days prior. I mean, you wore that all day.
I don't like it. I don't like the way it looks. I mean, there's something about it that's attractive, right? IWC has a penchant for like making interesting, cool watches. And you know, we've got ceramic and FK. Like, okay, fine. It's not for me. This is a weird watch.
It looks like a movie prop. I think the technology is cool. And coming from IWC, that's not the brand that I would have expected it from.
I guess I'll stay on the train, the station, the ship. IWC Engineer Perpetual Calendar 41 Titanium.
This is the one I didn't want to talk about. So,
so last year, Watches and Wonders, IWC introduced their stainless steel. Perpetual Calendar Engineer, which was taking sort of a classic Gerald Genta design, giving it the PC treatment with a really, really cool crown-operated perpetual calendar design by Kurt Klaus. It was a hit. People liked it. We didn't talk about it on the show, and I'm not sure why. With that said, well, I think I know why. It was kind of expensive, and it was like, meh. But now they've done it again. It's the same, except it's in all titanium, and it's in monochrome gray. And what was last year not exciting enough for us to have talked about on the show is all of a sudden exciting enough for us to both have put this in our notes, even though you claim you didn't want to talk about it.
Well, if we were we have three IWCs, and this is the one that I was the least moved by.
And turns out it's a hit.
Yeah.
It's a hit. 120 grams. It's a perpetual calendar that is a 41.6 millimeter diameter, something like 13 thick. I can't remember exactly what it is. It's a perpetual calendar. It's a perpetual calendar engineer. With that said, 120 grams.
Mm-hmm.
Grade 5 titanium, 13.2 thick, integrated titanium bracelet connecting through the middle link, 45% lighter than the steel version. Holy cow. So we do have functional screws securing the bezel on this because it's an engineer, which means it looks like an engineer. But with the monochrome treatment, it is... real killer. It is real killer. So this is powered by the Calibre 82600, which is a 28,800 vibration per hour, 60-hour power reserve perpetual calendar that's programmed, all functions adjusted via the crown. So no additional pushers, no funk on your case. It is a really, really interesting solution to the problem because it's IWC engineer. We've got a great see-through case back that shows a really beautiful movement with sort of a steering wheel cockpit rotor. I love this thing, dude. I think this is great. It's a $44,000 titanium watch, which is...
it's a hard pill to swallow.
It's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah.
Especially, it's IWC, right? This isn't Chopard. This isn't... So do I accept? Yes, I do. Do I love looking at pictures of this watch? Yes, I do. Am I going to line up to buy one? Probably not.
Am I going to line up if they're giving them away for free?
I'll line up for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll line up for that. I'll sleep on the street. This thing's really cool. It's too rich for my blood, of course. But if you're like... hey, you know what? I got 50 large in the bank account that I got to spend. I got to spend this money. And I want a sporty perpetual calendar that is not so heavy that it makes me feel bad
This is your watch.
Is there a way...
Right? If you're that person, this is your watch.
Is there a way that we could find to write off big watch purchases, like gambling losses?
Yeah. Well, I know you could write off watch purchases. I think you'd have to like be hodinky. But you could probably do it.
Could we, like, as a company, buy watches and write them off as, like, business expenses?
I mean, we could figure out a way.
Okay. Maybe we'll start buying some new watches. Maybe I really we'll like
do this. A nonprofit watch museum.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now we're on to something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then the acquisitions are for, like, historical preservation.
Correct. Correctamundo.
They're like, you could, like, double dip that. It's an expense and... It's a donation.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
We're on to something here.
that's what makes it a write-off.
Yeah, but no, it's double. Like, it's a donation because we donated that money to this other organization, and then it cost us money.
Sure.
So we double dip it. I'm pretty confident the IRS wouldn't know what's happening.
Let's do it.
I'm in. I'm not getting audited.
What's next, sir?
Okay, so... We've talked about one weird IWC watch. We've talked about one amazing IWC watch. And I'm going to talk about another weird IWC watch. We have the IWC Big Pilot Perpetual Calendar Seralume. And the first picture I saw of this, it's all loomed up. And I am for it. I love that there are not more full loomed aviators watches doesn't make sense to me. Right? If we're talking about a watch that is intended to be highly legible quickly, a full loomed dial makes perfect sense. And then
hold on.
And yeah, and then you move
I'm showing Andrew a picture.
And then you move past the full loomed image of it. And you might as well not be wearing a watch.
If you only wear your watch at night and you have one of those black light thingies, this is a relatively legible watch.
What the fuck?
But in the daylight.
And yes, this like, and we've poo-pooed on legibility. This is not.
You actually can't.
Can't read anything on this watch. You can't tell up from down, but for the fact that you're wearing it on your wrist. The top has to be at the top.
Someone in a comment somewhere recently, Andrew, came at me because I was like, I said something. I was like, legibility weirdos are weird. I don't remember what I said. I don't remember what the comment was. And he was like, this is a guy that bitches about like fonts on watches. It's like, fair. That is very fair. With that said, I do think like sort of legibility snobs are a little funny. With that said, this is like...
There's a difference between legibility. Like, oh, you know, the professional is way more legible than the Caribbean because of the contrast of the black and the orange.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, no. There are no color contrasts
on
this.
You just can't see it.
Yeah, you just can't. This is just a white dial with a disc that has two... holes, unsure what they're there for. The date window is also ghosted up, so you can't even read the gray font on your date window against this white, fully zoomed in macro photography. This is a difficult to read watch.
And of course, we're losing the plot a little bit here because the story of this watch is that it's full loom. And when
it's interesting because it's fully loomed pigments into this ceramic material of the case that allows it to be this really magically loomed watch in darkness. But in the light, it is... useless.
And to be clear, when we say full loom, we don't mean full loom dial. We mean full loom dial, subdials, hands,
crown,
bracelet. I don't think the crown's just steel.
Yeah, but the crown has loom on it.
No, I think you're seeing the reflection off the case.
You sure?
I'm 90.
That looks super loomy.
I am 95% sure that the...
No, that's loom. Look at the...
You can see the printed loom on that. It's too clean of a line for it to be a reflection.
Oh, man, you might be right.
The inside half of the crown is also painted with loom.
I don't think so. I just think it's polished steel.
No, dog, look, that's, you can see imperfections.
Randy Jackson'd you.
Look at that one. You can see imperfections in the loom application.
Hold on, let's see if we can find it.
Function. That's not a fucking, that's not a reflection.
Model, dial, case material.
But I see where you're talking about.
It says it's a stainless steel crown. I think
it could that be we're reflection. Just seeing it reflection. Could be, it could be that strong of a loom that it's reflecting off of the high polish onion.
I think it's a stainless steel crown, but we cannot confirm. We need to know from people who were buying this watch. Speaking of which, how much is this going to set you back?
Not much. Only 76,000 United States dollars. What the what?
I want to be angry at it, and I'm not.
I'm just confused by it. I think what got me excited was that I saw this pilot's watch that had too many complications, and I was like, oh, this makes perfect sense. A full loom case and dial for what's really intended to be an instrument for a pilot. But only about half of the day is dark.
Yeah.
And then the other half of the day, this is a totally useless instrument.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. With that said, I think it's kind of fun.
I would not kick it out of bed.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't text it again.
Yeah, that's right. Nomos?
Oh, yes. You slurping my... I was really excited about this. Nomos has been catching my attention in meaningful ways in the last year.
For that FAPTA.
Yeah.
Nomos released the last year, I think Watches and Wonders, they released the Club Sport Neomatic World Timer, which I think kind of took the world by storm. I think the Neomatic World Timer was a watch that served, I think, as a bridge watch for a lot of people. People who were like, I get it, German, in-house, really cool, doing their own thing, but it's not for me. It's not for me, dog. Nah, dog. It's a no from me. With that said, I think something about the Neomatic World Timer was maybe straightforward enough, although I think it would be a mistake to consider this a straightforward watch. It was sort of a bridge watch, I think. It's sporty. It's got almost normal sized lugs. It's got a fantastic layout.
It's a little eccentric.
Just a little bit.
This is the watch that you wear if you are a boat. Excuse me. Wow, that came out of nowhere. If you wear a bow tie in lieu of.
Yes.
This is a bow tie wearing watches.
But maybe bow tie, I feel like, okay, that guy's maybe an asshole. If I saw someone in a Neomatic World Timer, I'm like, that guy's not an asshole.
No, but he wears the bow tie because he prefers it. He likes the process of tying the bow tie.
That guy might be an asshole. The guy you're describing right now, a Neomatic World Timer does not give those vibes.
No, this is an eclectic, little bit eccentric. I prefer the bow tie.
Lead is still fully buried. They released it.
That's our thing. We have lime and shovels for leads here. Sometimes rope.
They've released the Neomatic World Timer in a white dial. In a serene, as Monochrome puts it, white dial with sparing doses of color. And what that is we've got some red.
We got a Pepsi.
And then we've got a bit of a, and then we've got a bit of a Pan Am slash Pepsi thing going on the world timer sub dial. This is really beautiful. The one question I have about this watch, and it's not about the watch itself, it is in the product photography, or perhaps it's monochrome photography. They've got this all steel Kaweco Sport fountain pen that's Nomos branded that I can't find, and I'm like, oh boy, I want that.
Does it come as a package?
It's just a new, it's just a pneumatic world timer in white. And that is in and of itself pretty cool. You know, one of the things that happened after the world timers came out is people's like, which one do you like the best? They're all kind of, and for me, that was like, well, they're all interesting, but they're all like kind of enigmatic. It feels like this is like the baseline release that I'd really...
that we wanted when the original came out.
Like to have had it in the first place.
No, I'd fuck with this before I'd... before any of the others.
If you don't know, it's a 40 millimeter by sub 10, 9.9 thick, 48 lug to lug, because it's Nomos. It's not going to be short, but 48's pretty reasonable. We've got a three-part polished steel case, screw-down crown, 100 meters of water resistance. Obviously, we've got a sapphire sandwich here, in-house, white silver-plated dial. This thing's fantastic.
It's good. This is the one.
Yeah.
4,260 euros.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's not a small amount of money, but for what you're getting here, I think sub $5,000, this is one of the most, I mean, in-house, like you really, if you're like, I want one of the coolest watches I can get for under $5,000. You got to look at this,
now right? You got to look at the entire Nomos catalog at that point, because Nomos, like...
And actually, Andrew, you said, I don't know what you said. This is U.S. dollars with VAT and everything. It comes up to 55, almost $6,000.
Yeah, it's 4,260 euros.
Yeah, well, 5580, which is not a direct conversion. So, 5,580 U.S. dollars.
Fucking tariffs.
And that's all I had to say about that.
Give me a second. Let's see what I...
Let's see you stop, collaborate, and listen.
I think I might have exhausted my list.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I'm looking at your list, and you don't have anything else to talk about. I should have been more thoughtful about that. Well, let's see.
That's, you know, par for the course.
I don't think we talk about that. I don't think we talk about that. I'm just going to... there's one more thing I'd like to talk about.
Okay, me.
And that is Cartier's Roadster.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Roadster is... I think this came out in the early 2000s. It is... It's always just felt very dated to me. And in fact, it feels like a watch that was or probably should have been released 10 years earlier than it was, which is to say, I don't think this was Cartier's best work at the time it was released. It was kind of dated, kind of funky, kind of weird. Like, who's this for, Cartier? With that said, it's an attractive watch, undoubtedly attractive. I've always struggled to understand it.
It's felt like a weird in between. It's like, well, the tank is too formal, the Santos is too square. What can we do to like meet in the middle? And you don't want to crash. God help you if the crash doesn't work.
I want a crash.
I think I would really love to own a Roadster and a crash, and then wear them in sequential days.
So Cartier has gone back to the Roadster. I think that the idea of the Roadster, it's sort of this like homage to sort of like lead craft, hot rod cars, which in and of itself is kind of weird, right? It's like some boomer designed this watch for boomers. With that said, they've sort of tweaked it. I think that's a good word for this.
Mm-hmm.
They have tweaked this to make it an altogether more attractive. So it's just little changes. And I'll be honest, I didn't catalog what those changes were. But what I can say is in looking at this watch, it is way less objectionable than the released in 2005, looking like a 1995 old version of the Roadster. All of a sudden, we've got a very coherent package of dimensions. It is undeniably a Roadster. You would be forgiven for looking at this and saying, that's just a Roadster. But when you get into it, you're like, oh, actually, everything is just a little bit better.
Look cleaned up.
Still got the big sort of headlight magnifier. Still got the pretty busy dial.
A lot
Roman
of
numerals. Yeah. Sort of really prominent minute track. Lots of sort of texture. And for me, these little changes have turned this into a really pretty compelling watch. We've got brush. We've got polish. We got lots of polish because we got Cartier.
Great step in the bezel of the case.
That's right. Yeah. Two sizes of this. We've got a 38 millimeter and I want to say a 35 millimeter.
47 and 42.
Those are wide dimensions.
The lug to lug. And then so it's a 38 and a 34.9.
Okay, so that's what I said.
Is it?
Yeah.
Because I don't remember you saying 4.9.
I said 30. I said 38 and 35. You're correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. big bullet crown. These are interesting. I kind of wanted to talk about them because it's a watch that I've always kind of been like meh about. And I think Cartier has taken this kind of meh watch and made it really better. They've made it all really better.
Yes.
Really better.
Much. Muchas, perhaps.
Muchas. Andrew.
I don't like, I've never liked the Cyclops on it.
Well, but I mean, that's like sort of
I know
like,
it's the thing, but I that's like.
The defining characteristic.
I know, but if they were to remove the Cyclops, I'm pretty okay with this, you know, Tank Santos hybrid.
Moving along.
I don't have any more things. So
well, other along. Things. What do you got?
Oh, my goodness. So I got really excited. I saw... I loved Beef Season 1.
Yeah.
Because it was phenomenal, right? It was, like, really relatable.
I think you talked about it on the show.
I almost certainly did. It was relatable. It was interesting. It was, like... It made you uncomfortable in all the right ways. So Beef Season 2 came out.
Did you just almost fall out of your chair?
No, I'm just trying to adjust to prepare for my outburst. And it's stacked with great actors. The writing is great. But it was... like the final season of Game of Thrones, or perhaps season 2 of True Detective, where they just tried to do too much. And as much as I enjoyed every single episode, even as I'm enjoying it, I'm like, this is too big. Just dial it back, right? Beef Season 1, it was a road rage incident, and then it spiraled. Right. And it felt so relatable because the characters were just super normal people who had a really fucked up day. And then it just like it got out of hand. This season was not that way. It was characters that once you got to know them, you could relate to them, but were just generally unrelatable.
they were trying to do too much. And I was like, as much as I enjoyed it, and I would highly recommend watching it because it was, the acting was great, writing was great. It like they've stuffed 10 pounds of shit into a 5 pound bag and it turned out okay. But I'm so bummed. I had hopes that it was going to be, that it was going to live up to it. Right. You know, in just the same way we all did the same thing with True Detective after season one, which was like one of the most perfect seasons of television ever written, to be followed up by season two, which was like, again, just think it. You try to do too much and got really ambitious and then you're like, oh God, we only have 3 hours left and we really have to wrap this up. That's how this felt. And it kind of bummed me out. They tie everything up neatly with a bow in a way that like is perfectly acceptable. But man, for how good it was, I was super bummed out by it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I do have to say, I consider Carey Mulligan a bit of a guilty pleasure, Andrew. Carey Mulligan as an actor is a guilty pleasure for me.
Why guilty?
I don't know. I mean, I feel a little guilty.
Okay, I accept. But yeah, it was the acting, like, top. Everyone was great. Everything about it was great, except that it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I'm going to have to, that's like, you do this sometimes where you're like, I didn't like this.
But I also loved it. But
then I'm like interested. And then I'm like, well, God, I got to check that out.
It is so worth a watch. But it just, I'm still processing it, right? I finished it today and I was just like, man, I loved it and I did not like it.
Interesting. Well, I'll have to check it out.
Okay.
Andrew, you and I have talked about games. In fact, we've talked about games on this show a handful of times, video games. I tend to, as I've gotten older, I tend towards the like sort of quick session. Like I need to be able to play this game for 5 to 10 minutes, right?
That's the time I have.
This is like a poop drop game.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of been kind of where my gaming interest has lied for several years, right? You know, I played Tears of the Kingdom, I played Breath of the Wild, but outside of that, I haven't really had any sort of like session games that I can really point back to and say, yeah, that sort of caught my attention. That has changed, and it has changed in a very odd direction. I'm going to admit that up front, okay? This is an odd...
Are you on The Sims? Like, are you back there?
No. In fact, there is quite a bit of sim gaming that has come through my house recently. Well, this is a sim game. In fact, it's called Simulators in the Game. It's called Farming Simulator.
I knew this was it.
I, on a whim, downloaded a game off of Steam called Farming Simulator. And I didn't download the new version, which is Farming Simulator 25. Rather, I downloaded the prior version, which is Farming Simulator 22. I did that primarily because I do not have a computer that I feel confident in the new version. And okay. I looked at the specs and I thought, well, I think my machine is more sort of suited towards this older version. So what is it? What is it? Well, the sort of as advertised theory applies here, which is to say it is quite literally a farming simulator. It is a simulation of farming, and it is not like Farmville, which I think is a game that many people listening to the show will be familiar with. I think circa 2007, 2008
in the zone, maybe a little later, but yeah,
Farmville was a thing, right? Like, oh, I'm gonna play this game via my Facebook account that everybody has, and I'm gonna grow blackberries and whatever else and make a farm. It is like that, except that it's not. It is very realistic, which is to say,
that you've got to like fertilize, and you've got to have equipment, and it's got to be the right equipment, and it's all licensed equipment from John Deere and Kloss and these like and like sometimes
mod packs to buy the Mercedes driverless trucks.
You can buy mod packs, which I've never in my life before about 3 weeks ago downloaded a mod. I occasionally will see this on, oh, you get a mod. I've downloaded mods now for it. I have begun to build my
controller.
I bought a controller. Man, oh man, you would think, and Kim is like, what are you doing?
Tending to my farm.
And I'm like, well, I've got to till so that I can seed. And then I've got, you know, I think I'm going to have to go lease a rock picker because the field's getting. And she's like, this is absurd.
What's the like the in-game timeline versus real life? Because it's obviously not like a year cycle to plant and sow, right?
So you get days. You get days and you can adjust the time. You can either go like half of real time or upwards towards, I think, 360 times real time.
So like a day a year.
And each day is a month, right? So, because, you know, they things happen in months. So in January, you can sow this, you can harvest this, you can, you know. Anyway, I'm just going to say this game has sucked me in and I've found myself really enjoying it. I think that there's, I mean, it's sort of like, I think I'm a lawyer, right? So I sit in a office and write emails and talk on the phone. And so there's an aspect of it where like, oh, I'm experiencing this thing that I otherwise wouldn't experience, which is interesting, right? Like equipment, like Tonka trucks. And so I think that is like a really sort of like visceral appeal. But yeah, I am bizarrely sucked into this and I'm having a lot of fun with it. So it was cheap. I don't remember what I paid for it. I got it on a sale for $25 or something like that. And I am just loving it.
How much have you spent since your initial purchase?
Zero.
Okay, zero. So it's the just mod support. Downloads for free. Mm-hmm, and, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep. I
downloaded a controller. You know.
I did buy a controller. Arguably, that controller could be used for other things. It's a PlayStation controller. I picked a PlayStation controller because we don't have any PlayStation stuff in the house.
Smart. Keep it to yourself.
And I wanted to have a controller that nobody else could use because the people in my house, not Kim, but the other people that live with me are prone to breaking things.
Disrespectful of other people's property.
That's right.
And not respectful of their own.
That's right. And so I bought a PlayStation controller because I said, nobody's going to have any reason to use this and it will be mine. So that was a purchase in and of itself. I was like, this is kind of cool, right? I don't have a modern gaming console, so buying a PlayStation, I was like,
a Switch, which is not a
that's
not
true.
Modern.
That's true. We've got a Switch. That's right. So, I was like, oh, this controller is pretty cool.
The texture on new controllers.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right.
The industrial design people. Man, they get it.
Yeah, they want that to be in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And they want you to be very comfortable with it.
Yeah. A friend of mine, what was that weird little teardrop shaped chapstick that was like all a rage?
I know what you're talking about. Yes.
He was an intern for whatever company that was. And the project he worked on was the click.
Oh,
the snap close,
sure.
That tactile feedback. And that was like 9 months of his life was just doing the design of the click.
Man, that seems like a lot of time. It's like when we when we designed the color for the style, we had 13 engineers spend 2 years of their life picking like.
It turns out it's blue.
Andrew, you got anything you want to add before we wrap it up for the night?
No, I'm out of things. I love that you're now a farm sim guy. You could maybe hit up Farmers Only now with your experience.
Hey, folks. Thanks for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20 of the Watch Clicker podcast. You can check us out on our website, watchclicker.com, or you can follow us on social media at Instagram at Watch Clicker or at 40 and 20 underscore Watch Clicker. If you want to support us, you can do that at patreon.com/40and20.
That is where we get all the support that we need to keep this show running. And it is not an insignificant amount of money. Patreon.com/40and20. Just navigate there and think about it. Just go to the website, think about it. And don't forget to tune back in next Tuesday for another hour of Watches, Food, Drinks, Life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.